Thank you, Shane. Thanks very much.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon on this Monday afternoon. If you want to contact the programme, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And if you're interested in that discussion on Liveline, you'll be interested in our guest after 4 o'clock, Samantha Power. Pulitzer Prize winner and former US ambassador to the UN. We'll be talking to her. And she's one of the most famous Irish-Americans living in America at the moment, I would imagine. So she will have opinions on what Irish-Americans should and should not think. She'll also have opinions on President Trump, of course, and she's obviously a supporter of Joe Biden. And I'm looking forward to chatting to her. That's after 4 o'clock today. We have news on who won the cottage. Yes, we spoke to Joan on Friday. Joan and Patrick raffled their cottage in County Mayo, 5 kilometres from Foxford, to raise money to help frontline workers. And we spoke to Joan. She explained to us that the money, and they raised nearly €1 million, which is fantastic, during the raffle. And the money is going to go to an educational bursary for people who worked in catering and cleaning, etc., in the hospitals during COVID-19. And that's great. So we have news about the winner of that. And if you haven't got the email, it wasn't you. That's sort of the opposite to it might be you. It wasn't you. You will have found out by now. I was sort of hoping that there'd be a text or an email when I woke up on Saturday morning telling me I'd won the raffle. But no, it wasn't me. And it wasn't you, if you're not going to be talking to us later on. And also, Conor Pope is here today. So if you have any consumer type issues for Conor, get on to ray@rte.ie. Speaking of consumer things, I went into town for the first time in 6 months on Saturday morning. 6 months, and I think that's the longest I've not been in Dublin city centre for about 40 years or even more, probably 50 years. Anyway, went in and it's a bleak enough place now. I don't know if you've been there, but it's sort of eerie. It's not tumbleweed stuff. There are people there, but nowhere near the numbers that would have been in Dublin city centre on a typical August Saturday, particularly the Saturday before the schools returned. And I got out as quickly as I got in, and the shop I was going to wasn't open. Now, you think I would have checked. There used to be that Aircom ad. Remember, before you set out at all, make that call. But I checked their website during the week and they were open till 6 o'clock during the week. And I just assumed they were going to be open on Saturday of all days. So after building myself up to getting into the car and getting parked and everything like that, and then I walked down and it wasn't open. So back into the car and back home. And yesterday was a very productive day in my house because I focused on the shed. Now, yeah, focused on the shed, 6 foot by 6 foot shed. It's amazing the amount of rubbish you can get into that small space. Rubbish that's been there for 12 years. I think that's as long as we're in the house. Yeah, nearly 12 years. This December, we'll be in the house 12 years. And the worst thing with that is, you know, you have this notion. It's like you have a little sort of manic episode and you go, I'm going to clean out the shed. And then you say it out loud and then Jenny goes, great, can't believe it. That's brilliant. And now you're committed to it. And then you get up the next morning, you probably don't feel like cleaning out the shed. And then you take everything out of the shed and it's all laid out there. Luckily, yesterday was a lovely day. And you're looking at it and you're going, oh, why did I start this? Why did I start this? And you know that it involves a trip to the recycling centre as well, on top of everything else. Anyway, it's done. It's done. I just want to mention everybody up in the recycling centre in Ballyogan in Dublin. Probably one of the best run recycling centres in the country, I would imagine. They do brilliant work and everybody up there is so enthusiastic and so helpful. But in cleaning out the shed, I came across 4 boxes of old vinyl. I sort of half knew it was there, but had forgotten about it. So Jenny says, don't go near those. Don't go near, because she knew what would happen. If I started looking through them, I'd be going, ah, look at that, look at that. I'd be running in, playing it on the record player, as you used to call it. So she said, take a handful. That's all you're allowed. Take a handful. So I took a handful. And I must have been from my gimmicky. It must have been, you know, a handful of gimmicky 7-inch singles. That must have been the, you know, the other way you categorise all your vinyl. Oh, you don't know. Well, some sad people used to do that back in the day. They used to categorise all their vinyl and then label them all and have them all. And anyway, there you go. Anyway, I picked out about 5 or 6 and 3 of them are what you describe as gimmick. Yeah, this one.
I was born under a wandering star.
Lee Marvin from 1970, ladies and gentlemen. Yes. Paint Your Wagon. It was a musical from the 50s and then they made a movie out of it. And Lee Marvin insisted on singing the songs.
I was born.
I know. Is that singing?
Star.
His singing is nearly as bad as mine.
I was born under a wall.
I think that's bad. This is one of the other 7-inch singles I picked out of the box. Hello? Hello? Pinky and Perky. And if Lee Marvin sounded like he was slowed down, Pinky and Perky were definitely sped up. They were puppet pigs. And they recorded a number of songs. And one of those was in my granny's gramophone. So a fond place in my childhood memories of Pinky and Perky. And then this one.
I am the morning DJ at WOLDD. Playing all the hits for you. Wherever you may be, the bright good morning voice who's heard but never seen.
It's amazing the things are connected. So last Tuesday, came back from holidays, we had Jerry Daly on announcing the winners of the Gardens competition. I picked out Harry Chapin's song, Flowers Are Red. Didn't get to play it until Thursday. Tom and Navin loved it. And then me in the shed yesterday, picking out a handful of singles. Could have been any. Five of hundreds of 7-inch singles in boxes in the shed. And one of them was Harry Chapin again. I am the morning DJ on WOLD. So there they are. Maybe I'll do that every week. I'll just dip in, then play a few. Maybe not. Maybe not. Your shed has to be bigger than 6 foot by 6 foot. It's not. I measured it because Jenny's on to me to get a new shed. It's always the man's job, isn't it? Get a new shed. Why don't you just get a new shed? That one's falling apart. Yeah, I measured it. It's 6 foot by 6 foot. That's the exact size of the shed. You barely fit a bike into it. But you can fit an awful lot of rubbish. Now, over the years, on various radio programmes, I've eaten rubbish. And most of the time, I don't mind. I'm sort of a human dustbin. I don't squirm away from challenges when it comes to culinary challenges. I've eaten ants. I've eaten various bits of, you know, animals that you would normally eat, and oysters, no problem. In fact, it got boring. It got boring because anytime they asked me to eat something, I'd say, ah, yeah, fine. Ah, yeah, yeah. Haggis, no problem. Yeah, a bit of stomach. Yeah, great. Anything. Until today. So there was somebody tweeting over the weekend. I have it there somewhere. I'll find it. And they tweeted their favourite sandwich is banana and crisp. Sorry, if you're having your lunch. Excuse me. So I was hoping they'd forget about it. And that often happens. You know, we've a Zoom meeting at 10 o'clock and they mention this and I'm not too enthusiastic about it. And then they forget and it doesn't happen and everybody's happy, particularly me. But Niamh, who's producing today, said when I arrived in, how about that crisp and banana sandwich? I said, do I really have to? I had an underripe banana after my lunch and it's not sitting well. And then I thought to myself, well, oh, I'd better do it. So in front of me, I have a white roll, iced and tater crisps, and I have a banana. The makings of a banana and crisp roll. So I'll get that together and we'll talk about it after a piece of music. 51551 rayatrte.ie. If you have any experience of eating a banana and crisp sandwich, do let me know, just to prepare me. Now, good afternoon, yeah. That's great, isn't it? Charles Rice and the What's 103rd Street Band and Express Yourself on RT Radio 1, 51551 rayatrte.ie. Wasn't that Harry Chapin's song, the theme song of an American TV series set in an Indiana... No, I'll start again. It's Monday. Wasn't that Harry Chapin's song, the theme song of an American TV series set in an Indian... How do you say that word? Indianapolis. Thank you very much, radio station. It's way off in the midst of time. There was, I don't know if it was that particular song, but there, I remember that. Lee Marvin said at the time, I don't sing, but if the producers want to pay me $500,000 to sing one song, I'll sing it. Paint Your Wangin' with Clint Eastwood and Lee Marvin is one of my favourite movies, says James in Sligo. Lee got to number one with that song. Also, Clint Eastwood sang in that movie, says Sean in Ballyogan. And Ray, actors who couldn't sing were advised to speak it. Think of Telly Savalas when he sang the song If, says Mary in Clontarf. Yeah, that was a Bread song originally, wasn't it? And then Telly Savalas, who played Kojak, Who Loves You Baby, he did his version of it. That's from vinyl. Do you hear it? Do you hear the nice little... I might have to wait for Telly now, but I'm just putting off the inevitable of the banana and crisp sandwich. Telly.
If a picture paints 1,000 words, then why can't I paint you? The words will never show the you I've come to know.
Some voice. That's Telly Savalas there. And on the dreaded sandwich, Helen says the banana has to be mashed. She said, I had a banana and crisp sandwich yesterday and today, gorgeous, you must mash the banana. One of my favourite makes it sweet and savoury, crunchy and soft. Mmm, says Siobhan. It has to be white sliced pan with the banana and crushed up potatoes, salt and vinegar crisps. Yum. Very important. What flavour potatoes? Should be cheese and onion. They're cheese and onion. Hate bananas and sandwiches, says Pat. Right, and you have to, there you go, you have to do that. I took the liberty of mashing the banana during the, this is going to be a long programme if I can't speak. Mashing the banana. So I'm going to place that in, this is getting messy now, in the thing. Niamh is in here shooting this for social. Why would anybody in their right mind want to look at this? But anyway, there's shaking some crushed up crisps onto the thing. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm not looking forward to this. I'm going out with him 12 years and then this, banana and cheese and onion crisps. You never really know someone. I'm out of here. That's the tweet that inspired this. So obviously some poor young lady who thought she had met the one is now questioning the last 12 years when she sees him eat a mashed up banana and crisp sandwich. I would, that would be a deal breaker for me. And here I am with one in my hand. Here goes. No, is all I can say. No. No, no, wrong on so many levels. No, no, no. No, no, no.
The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
I've drank an awful lot of water there since I last spoke to you. Sorry, I don't want to offend people who like banana and crisp sandwiches, but just not for me. Just not for me. Cornflakes and fresh white bread with loads of butter. Somebody else. Yes, it's fabulous, but it will have to be King Crisps. Banana and King Crisps, or even crisps, are also gorgeous with homemade brown bread, cold butter, delicious. It's even much nicer than white bread, says Paula. In relation to the Sambo challenge, I think that sounds the finest. One of my comfort sandwiches is banana and cheese. There you go. Freak of nature, I am. It's actually so yummy. You get the cheese and the sweetness from the banana. You sound like one of those MasterChef judges now. I suppose you could describe it as the pauper's answer to artisan cheese and quince paste or fig. That's Malvina in Galway. Banana and cheese, somebody else says. And I think that song that was on the TV programme was a radio station in Cincinnati called WKRP. Ah, it was. I used to watch that. And Steve Carlisle was the guy who sang that, says Stephen Dorn from Newbridge in County Kildare, knows his stuff. And my first adult concert in the stadium was Harry Chapin. I have many of his vinyls. Search out Story of a Life, says Margaret. And best record I have is Spock and Captain Kirk doing covers of well-known songs, says Jerry in Kildare. I think we're going to have to get clips of spoken word songs. As it happens, actually, there was one on Morning Ireland this morning. I don't know if you heard it. But Uachtaráin na hÉireann, Michael D. Higgins, doing a Van Morrison song. spoken word version of it to celebrate Van's 75th birthday today. And you can hear that later on a Hot Press website. We undertook the same job yesterday, cleared the shed, prompted by a notification from DLR that it's Eden Park Recycling Centre in Glastool where we're accepting paint cans. A big thank you to all the workers there who dealt with the queues on a busy sunny Saturday in Glastool. Clear shed, the satisfaction, Linda. Yeah, well, it does. It's more than just a physical act, clearing out a shed. It gives you control over your world. Makes you feel good mentally, I think. It lifts the weight. Now, on Friday, we spoke with Joan, who was raffling off her beautiful cottage in Mayo in aid of frontline workers. The raffle took place online on Friday night. We were on tenterhooks all weekend to see if we won. I mean, who won? Joan is back on the line. How are you doing, Joan?
How are you doing, Ray? I'm doing very well, thank you.
Good to talk to you again. So, what happened immediately after you spoke to us on Friday?
Well, after we spoke to you on Friday, the number of donations spiraled really high. The computer over in Ohio nearly stuttered and broke down. There were so many people willing to give their last 10 euro in the last few minutes, and thank you so much.
Yeah, well of course it's the prize, nothing to do with us. And I suppose people felt that they were helping a good cause, and then there was the chance, that little slim chance, that they might have that lovely cottage in the scenic part of County Mayo. So it happened midnight our time or their time on
10 p.m. our time.
10 p.m. our time, okay.
Was the time the draw stopped, yes.
And it was completely random selection by a computer?
Completely random by a computer, yes. We had no interference into it whatsoever. We had to wait, same as everybody else,
okay,
to see
and
who won.
What was the final figure?
The final figure was 968,750,000 euro.
Whoa.
Just short of 1 million.
That's an amazing amount of money.
Absolutely amazing. And we are so thankful to all the people who paid their money, and some bought more than one ticket.
Yeah.
So thanks to everybody for supporting it.
When you and Patrick, you know, decided to do this way back in June, what was the figure? You know, because you do, you say, if we make that much money, it will be a success. What was the figure you'd put on it?
Well, initially, we were hoping that we'd get 25,000. And then some man from Sweden rang Carol Kelly, who was helping us all with the pictures and had it on our website. And this guy rang from Sweden and asked her, how much was the cottage worth? And she said, well, it's worth about 100,000 euro.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, I'll think about that. And a few weeks later, he called her again and he said, I've decided that I will offer you 100,000 for the cottage, and I'll pay you the same to the
charity. Oh, right.
Yes. And by that time, it had got to 100,000. We were absolutely staggered. But by the time he phoned again, it was up to 700,000
right,
euro.
Right.
And so she told him that on the phone, Carol, and there was a long silence, and then the phone went dead.
Right.
So, yes.
Well, she could have advised him to go off and buy a few tickets himself. You know, like the rest of us.
She probably did, probably did.
Okay, so everybody wants to know, because that's a lot of tickets there that you sold at 10 or each. And the winner was selected, as we say, by computer, and we have the winner on the line. Congratulations, Geraldine!
Thank you very much, Ray. Thank you.
You're over the excitement, obviously.
It's still sinking in, to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah, that wow. Yeah. When did you buy the ticket? Was it early on in the process? Or?
Yeah, it was. I think it was about a couple of weeks after the Irish Times article. I had cut it out and I kept it on the fridge and I thought, I'm going to buy some of that.
Yeah.
And I honestly bought the tickets just thinking it's a donation to the frontline workers, and I really never thought anything more about it. So I was utterly shocked then when I got the news on Saturday morning.
How did you get the news?
Well, it was actually an Irishman from Canada. He emailed or messaged me on WhatsApp, I forget which, and he said, congratulations on the cottage. This is great news. Can we interview you? And I thought, ah, this has got to be a bit of a scam now. So I looked into my email, and sure enough, there was an email from the owners and an email from Carol Kelly Auctioneers. So that was it.
And was it just hello, you've won, or congratulations, yeah. Or
yeah, I was. Both of them said congratulations, you won the cottage. We'll be in touch later on to discuss details or whatever. So that was it. Yeah.
So now you have a house. Had you got a house already?
I have my own house in Dublin. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I know you don't want to give out too much about yourself, and thanks so much for taking our call today. But is a cottage in the country something that appeals to you?
Oh my God, it's been my dream for about 20 years.
Right, okay.
Yeah. I lived in the States for 20 years, and my goal was to move home, which I did in December 2016. And I kept dreaming about living out in the country, because I grew up in the countryside, and having a little cottage, an old cottage, and my own little space. So this is an absolute dream come true.
Well, that's it fits the bill, doesn't it?
Oh, totally. And much more so than what I ever imagined.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who did you ring first, do you mind me asking?
I rang my mother.
Right.
Yeah.
And
she was over the moon.
Yeah. I want a house, Ma. I want a house.
Yeah. She couldn't believe it. Yeah. She said, what? I said, do you not remember the article that was in the Irish Times? And she was like, oh, my God.
Very exciting. So you're still processing the whole thing. I believe you're away. Coincidentally, you're in the same part of the country that Joan and Patrick are in, so you're going to hook up with them and then travel up and look at the house and sign the papers and all that sort of thing. And will you move there, or will you use it as a bolt hole, or what are you going to do?
Well, initially I'm going to go there and spend a week. I work remotely at the moment, like most other people, so I'll spend a week there and see if working remotely suits. My plan is to be down there at least twice a month. And then offer it. I'm going to get keys cut for my siblings once it's all signed and delivered, so they can go and use it as well.
Ah, that's very generous of you. How many siblings have you got?
I have three
right.
brothers.
Okay. Have you ever won anything before? Are you a lucky type of person?
Not really. I won a camera when I was 14, I think.
Right, I'm not giving away your age, but that's a good while ago.
It was, yes.
Yes. And the you know, the cause, the charity, did that strike home with you?
Oh, very much so. I was telling Joan and Patrick that I worked as a nurse's aide in Hammersmith Hospital for a year back in the 90s. It definitely, like, there's the workers that get recognition, and then there's workers who really, they're the wallpaper people, if you like.
Yes,
you know, they're in
yes.
the background, they're keeping the wheels turning, but they really don't get the appreciation or acknowledgement that they deserve. So I'm delighted that they've raised this amount of funds for it.
Yeah, I was saying to Joan on Friday that she had no control who was going to win the house. And was that a scary prospect? So Joan, you've spoken to Geraldine. How do you feel about the person who's going to be turning the key into your house and living there or whatever over the next years?
Well, we are very happy that Geraldine is delighted and excited, and it's one of her dreams to win the cottage or to have a cottage in the country, and we're very happy that she's so excited about it.
Yeah. It's a great...
And she's a lovely person. So far, I haven't yet met her.
So far, that's... I love you, Joan, because you know I know the way you are now, just from even that comment. She's a lovely person so far.
All will be reviewed.
Geraldine, you're still on probation.
I am. It says the same the other way around too.
Yeah, but there you go.
Yeah.
Well, listen, it's a great story. It's a great story, and everyone will be able to tell it for years and years to come. €968,750 raised for frontline workers, which is going into some sort of an educational bursary, Joan.
Yes, we're we're talking to three different charities now to see who can help us with our plan to set up an educational bursary. And initially, we've been talking with Apple, who have said that they will provide the laptops at a very good price.
Okay.
That's where we are with it now.
Geraldine, have you thought about names at all?
For what?
The house.
Oh, gosh, no, I haven't actually.
Hey.
Yeah.
Now, we provide a service here, as most radio shows do. We could ask our listeners to offer names. You don't have to use them. You're not contractually obliged. Okay, so here you go. Geraldine has won this house in a raffle that Joan and Patrick organised to raise funds for frontline workers. And it's a dream she's had for 20 years. It'll be a bold toll for her and her siblings, or maybe it might even be a place she can work from home. And it's in the shadow of the mountains and close to a river. So a name, please, to 51551. And we'll send them on to you, Geraldine. And if you use one of them, you will let us know, and we can send something out to the person who suggested it.
I will, of course.
Okay.
Thank you.
Joan, well done again on a brilliant and a very selfless initiative. Yourself and Patrick got involved in an amazing amount of money to raise. And Geraldine, well may you wear, as my granny used to say, be safe and enjoy your new house. Bye now to you both. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye, bye, bye.
Thank you, Ray.
Bye, bye, bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Text 51551. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Yeah, 51551 or ray@rte.ie. I can't read some of these. And you're sick, O'Ray. That sandwich needs to be toasted. Ah, I don't know if it'd improve it anything. Anyway, I'll eat any sandwich once there's no ketchup or tomatoes in it, said somebody else. And banana and Turkish honey on toast is the way to go. Well, that makes sense. It's like a dessert. That's Patricia from Minchicore. How are you, Patricia? Sliced very fresh white bread, generously buttered with cheese, onion and peanuts. That sort of makes sense as well. Cheese and onion, they complement each other. Worked with a guy who dipped a chocolate gold grain into his soft egg yolk. Now that's wrong. That's wrong. And loads of suggestions of spoken word songs as well. We'll get to those. Connor Bope joins the studio. How are you doing, Connor?
I'm not so bad. Now, I actually remember WKRP in Cincinnati. I was a very small child when it was on, but it was like, seems so exotic. American radio stations.
Yes.
And it was also, William Shatner does a great version of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Somebody else says he does Pulp's Common People, which
he
I've
does
heard.
That as well, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
He has a number of albums of spoken
word. You see, I was stuck
word.
In traffic on the way here. I literally just arrived about 30 seconds ago, so I got to listen to that entire delightful segment about the banana sandwich.
Have you any odd things that you
when
put
I was
together?
A kid, I used to love, and I haven't had it since I was a kid, so I apologize, Easy Singles,
yeah.
And peanut butter. Crunchy
right.
Peanut butter and Easy Singles. Not toast, none of that fancy
but
toast
peanut
business.
Butter is salty, so
yes,
that's
yeah, yeah, no, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
no, that, and I was never
bad.
Into the whole sweet and salty little thing. I like jam and peanut butter and stuff. That was
yeah.
never really my thing.
As a treat on a Sunday afternoon, I used to get a bag of crisps and cut up a pear and put them in a bowl together. That was my treat.
It's like something from Angela's Ashes, really, isn't it? A bag of crisps and a pear. And did you get an orange off Santa Claus, Ray?
No. a piece of coal. That's what I got. All right. Pricewatch@rte.ie. Right, you're settled in now and you're relaxed.
Yeah.
So Bank of Ireland have increased the current account fees from €5 per quarter to €6 per month. And one of our listeners asks, how is that fair? I'm sick to death of being ripped off.
Yeah, this was a very short mail that I got, but I thought it was actually it came via Twitter, but I thought we might as well highlight it because it's what a lot of people are talking about. And I think we're going to see a whole raft of changes to bank charges coming down the tracks in the days and weeks ahead. And when you think about it, OK, if it was €5 a quarter to €6 a month, that sounds pretty horrendous, doesn't it?
Yes.
Because €5 a quarter in fees,
yes.
€20 a year, €6 a month. 72 euros
yes,
a year. So
yes.
It seems like an absolutely savage increase. And when you read it first, you think, oh, that's just appalling. But the good news, for want of a better word, is it's not as bad as it sounds.
Explain
because
yourself.
What Bank of Ireland has done is they've introduced this whole raft of changes to its banking services. And it's got rid of all of the individual transaction charges for personal account holders. That means, and it's replaced them with a single flat fee of €6 per month for maintaining their account. Now, that means there's no bank charges anymore for contactless payments or for ATM use or for online transactions or over-the-counter transactions or all of those really irritating charges that Bank of Ireland, like a lot of other banks, have rolled out over the last 10 or 15 years. And they've decided to do this because they want to make it more simple and easier for people to follow. Now, that's their line. And to be honest, I kind of buy it because they're competing against rivals that just did not exist in the financial space a decade ago. I mean, Bank of Ireland are no longer just competing with AIB and Ulster Bank and PTSB and all the rest. They're competing with the likes of Revolut and N26, these online virtual banks that are just gaining huge traction, particularly amongst a younger audience.
But they're so convenient.
Well, listen, like I mean, I have my
13-year-old daughter on Revolut.
So do I.
And convenient.
And I mean, and I have the Revolut card as well. And one of the reasons, you know, and like, initially when I was signing up, I was like, oh, this is very dodgy. I'm not going to use this. But I signed up to the Revolut card. And I shouldn't be saying this because it goes against what people might think I am. So I was like, oh, it's free if you just have it as a virtual product. But I said, oh, no, I want the card as well, just in case I need to use the card. So I have the Revolut card as well. And I think I pay something like $6.99 a month for the privilege of having the piece of plastic that I can also use as well as any of the virtual transactions,
okay,
which makes it kind of the same price.
Same price, yeah.
As the Bank of Ireland charge.
So you have unlimited transactions for that $6.99?
Yeah, like certainly I've never reached any kind of ceiling. I've never incurred any kind of charges.
Okay.
Something else that irritated some people about the Bank of Ireland move is they used to have this situation in place whereby if you had a personal bank account and you had a minimum balance of $3,000 in it, you wouldn't get paid any fees.
Like, and everybody was asking
to lodge, the stupidest place to put it is in your current account where you attract zero interest. Now, the reason why the bank wants to, why all the banks want to up their charges is because they're not getting any money from people who have money on deposit, because, you know, there's no value in that. So that's what's happening. The bank will continue to offer the free banking for seniors, for students and for graduates. But the key thing is how many people will lose out versus how many people will benefit from the changes. Now, the reality is that if you use your bank account a lot, and if you have a lot of ATM transactions, and if you have a lot of over-the-counter transactions or contactless, or whatever it might be,
you're going to benefit
more. And they reckon that you'll
save money.
They reckon around 60% of Bank of Ireland's customers will be slightly better off,
okay,
and around 40% will be slightly worse off. And we're really not talking about huge amounts of cash. We're talking about, you know, maybe having to pay €90 versus
understand that this is a flat fee.
It is, but there's another issue which is going to happen, and all of the banks are looking to the central bank to be allowed to increase their charges without having to get the green light from the central bank. And there would be a fear that if the banks can increase their charges whenever they want, there would be a fear that there would be a race to the top in terms of charges, and the banks would start increasing their charges over and over again. And ultimately, it's the consumers that can pay the price. And the reason why this would be a fear is the banks kind of know that they can do whatever they want and we'll stick with them, because the rate of switching between bank accounts is absolutely minuscule. Like, you're talking about less than 2% of people would routinely switch
to
their bank
accounts. We've discussed this before, because people see it as hassle.
And they do see it as hassle. But the reality is it's not as much hassle as people think it is, but it is a little bit of hassle. And I'll hold my hand up and say the reason why I am with my current bank is because when I was a student more than 30 years ago, they were the ones that gave me a €10 overdraft, whereas the other bank wouldn't give me the €10 overdraft. And that's what, and then, so then I went to this bank, and then you're thinking, oh, do I want to switch? So again, you know, even though it's not as difficult as people, it's still a hassle.
But you're saying that the other banks are going to follow suit on this.
I think all of the banks will start changing the ways in which they charge. First, they'll probably look, because like AIB, Ulster Bank, all the other banks have varying types of fees, but they all still have the per transaction fees. I think Bank of Ireland may have been the first mover here in introducing the flat transaction to the flat fee, but I think that'll all happen. And I think people do need to keep an eye out for the banks that start upping their charges, and people do need to be more proactive if there is substantial increases. The only way you put manners on any company is by taking your business elsewhere.
Yeah, now, just on Revolut, and what's the name of the other service?
N26. So there are two virtual banks.
So back in the day when you got your £10 overdraft from your current bank, you stayed with them.
You
got a mortgage from them.
So they, I did, funnily enough.
Yes, yeah. So they knew you. You had a relationship.
Yeah.
Now, Revolut don't provide mortgages.
But you know what we've all found over the last 10 or 15 years is that the relationship you have with your bank is absolutely worthless. And I mean that across all banks.
I'm laughing because you're right.
Because not only did they screw the country to the tune of like 60 billion euro, they also have moved an awful... Now, again, this is not about individuals in banks because they're doing a great job in many respects. But an awful lot of what the banks did was they centralised everything up in Dublin. You know, obviously that's where it was. That's where all their headquarters are. And that kind of fracture to the relationship that existed between bank managers, assistant bank managers and the individual customers that they had. Because bank managers could, you know, they had a relationship. They were part of the community.
And they had discretion.
And they were part of the community. Yes. They were embedded in the community. There was branches around the country. Everyone was kind of, and they were kind of looking out for you. Like the reason why my bank gave me the 10 euro overdraft was because I probably needed it to buy cider or something. and they were looking out for me in that respect. But you know what I mean. They had individual discretion to make decisions.
The new young pope from down the road, and they knew that
he was good for the tenor. And you know what? They've made so much cash for me over the last 40 years that they were probably right.
Yeah, and that's a bit sad though. And that's the banks aren't the only institutions that are guilty of that. Right across the board, things have gone computerized. There's less flexibility, less one-on-one, less interaction.
And that human interaction is something that I think ultimately we will miss. Now, having said that, and I think this is sometimes when I hear about people about branches closing and people missing out on the interaction, I hate going into my bank. Like I hate it. The queues, I've never thought to myself, do you know what I'd love today? I'd love to go into my branch and have a chat. So I don't miss that, and I'm happy to do virtually everything virtually. But there are some people who miss those kind of human interactions with their banks.
Before I let you go, pricewatch@rt.ie, you mentioned William Shatner. You said one song.
Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
I said this one.
She told me that her dad was loaded. I said, in that case, I'll have a rum and Coca-Cola. She said, fine. And in 30 seconds' time, she said, I want to live like common people.
There are people who think that's the best ever.
I think when Jarvis Cocker does it, it sounds cool.
Yes.
When William Shatner does it, it sounds kind of creepy. Like you.
Well, what else could I do?
Production's great. That's all I can say. And William Shatner is good at the old irony, isn't he?
And you know what? He doesn't take himself too seriously. I think that's a really good trait for anybody to have.
Pricewatch@rte.ie, and we'll talk to Connor next week. Thanks very much, Connor.
Thanks, Larry.
Mind yourself.
Tweet at Radio Ray RTE. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
You're brilliant. Loads of ideas for names for the house, Geraldine's new house, in the shadow of a mountain, by a river. She won it in a raffle. Life's Dream, good name for Geraldine's house, says Anna Kilkenny. The Freebie. The Lucky House, says Andrew in Cork. Chalk Bui, says somebody else. That's the yellow house. How about Mountain Dream? That's a nice one, isn't it? Helen suggests that. The cottage should be called At Last, says Tim in Wexford. Tombola. See what they did there? You know, the raffle. Yeah. Ken McHugh says Frontline Cottage, of course. And Hope, says somebody else. That's a nice name, Hope. Geraldine's Cottage. See what I did there? Oh, Gerald Dream. Gerald Dream. That's the name of the cottage. See what I did? I do. That's a winner, says Daryl. Gerald Dream. And I suggest that lady calls her new house, There's No Place Like Home, says Aina in Mullingar. How are you doing, Aina? Paradise Found, Dreamland, says somebody else. A nice name for that cottage. Lucky Lodge, that's a nice one, Mick. That cottage should be named Serenity View, says Deck in Dublin. Call the cottage Serendipity, which is a lovely word. We mentioned that the other day for some reason, Serendipity. The name I suggest is Suveness, meaning calm, peaceful, quietness. That's Jerry, Lillis and Killarney. Suveness. Dreamcatcher Cottage. Dundreamin Cottage. Two suggestions there from one person. And on the banking, I have never met anyone from my bank. I got a mortgage approved via an online messaging service. I have no relationship with my bank at all. Well, it wasn't like that back in the day. Now, an exciting weekend for Rebecca and Jared Dunn. They welcomed their new baby son, Rory, into the world early on Saturday morning, but it wasn't the traditional way. And both Rebecca and Jared are on the line. How are you doing, Rebecca?
Hi, how are you, Ray? How are you getting on?
Good. I believe I have to speak very lowly because Rory is asleep on your lap, is he?
Yeah, I don't think you'll wake him. I think he'll be all right.
So Rory is baby number two, is it?
Yeah, he's a little brother to Dahi.
Dahi. And how's Dahi with the new arrival?
Oh, he's brilliant. He's taken to a duck to water to being a big brother.
Yeah. And you're at home, are you? Or are you still in hospital? Or?
No, I'm home. I came. I'm staying with my mum and dad at the moment while Jared's away. So,
okay.
Yeah, no, happy.
And Ger, you got more than you bargained for. Well, you know, you were looking forward to the arrival of your new babby. Talk us through what happened on Saturday night, Sunday morning. Was it Friday night, Saturday morning?
Friday night. Yeah, hi, Ray. Yeah, so it was quite interesting. We called the MLU unit in the maternity led unit in Drogheda. In Our Lady of the Lord's Hospital in Drogheda, at 5 to 5 a.m. To say, hey, we're thinking about coming in, but we're not 100% sure yet, because we had a bit of experience. It was quick enough with Dahi, but it wasn't this quick. And so they said, yeah, if whenever you're ready, you can come on in. So of course, then the next couple of minutes, things started to get a little bit more exciting at home. And So Rebecca's man, Bridie, we called her to say, come on over, keep an eye on Dahi while we're gone, because Rebecca wasn't due until next Friday. And so anyway, we met Bridie on the way in to the house. We were on the way out, and we drove to the hospital, which is about 12, 13-minute drive at that hour of the night, maybe less. We're driving over the Bridge of Peace, and we've been in contact with the hospital a couple of times at this stage. And Rebecca just said, oh no, my waters have broke. And, you know, we're calm enough. We've gone through this before. We should be okay. There's still plenty of time. And I said, no, you're okay. You're okay. You know, we still have loads of time. And she goes, no, I have a head. Anyway, we just need Jen, the MLU rang, say, how are you doing? And I said, Rebecca's waters have broken and we have a head. And they said, okay, don't push. I think that's what they said anyway. Don't push. And so, okay, no problem. And about 150 metres up the road, we get I get a bit of a noise and a bit of a slush, for want of a better word. And next thing I hear, a baby cry. And I said, we have a baby. And all credit to Rebecca. She grabbed Rory and pulled him in. We had a towel. I left the towel on the seat. And she wrapped them in the towel as best she could, held them tight, kept them warm. Uh-huh. And the staff then met us at the hospital door. Great staff from the MLU met us at the hospital door and brought us up, cut the cord, made sure everything was okay. Mother and baby were okay. And a really happy story.
You're a hero, Rebecca.
What is that now?
And, like, what goes through your head when all this is happening? What are you thinking?
I don't even think you have time to think. I was just in so much shock that, because I think we were, just over an hour in total from when I got a first twinge to when Rory decided to make his graceful entrance.
It was 34 minutes. Yeah, sorry, it was actually 34 minutes from the time we rang the hospital to the time Rory arrived. I'm running ringing the hospital to say, we're thinking about coming in here, so...
So yeah, I think my body just took over and decided it knew what it was doing more than my head, thank God.
Yeah.
And just, I don't know.
And he cried, and that's obviously that sound that you want to hear, isn't it?
Oh, it was amazing, yeah. Hearing, I was like, okay, he's crying. He's got to be pretty much okay. Rubbed him down with the towel and, as Jer said, kept him warm for the remainder of the 2-minute journey until the MLU met us at the hospital doors. So,
And Jer never stopped driving?
There was no, in fairness, he's like, I said, no.
Keep going.
Keep going, we're nearly there, sure.
Yeah,
just don't crash the car. Keep an eye on my drivers at that hour of the morning. You know, because there's always someone a bit crazy that hour of the morning taking a chance. So keep an eye on the traffic, and that was it.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations to you both.
Thank you.
Great story. People may have noticed listening that Ger was able to tell us that it was 12 or 13 minutes from his house to the hospital, and also that it was 34 minutes from the time he made the call until the baby was born. And the reason he pays attention to all these things is it's part of his job, because he's head performance analyst with the Republic of Ireland soccer team. So statistics are what you deal in every day. Ger?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's a big part of my job. Yeah, numbers and video and analyzing things. So yeah, I'm interested in all that sort of stuff. So that would have been something that I'm a bit little bit nerdy like that.
Yes, yeah. Yes, yeah, we got that. Now it means, Rebecca, that you're separated. You're separated.
Yeah, yeah, separated now for the next 10 days or so. But it's worth it. I'm glad Rory decided to arrive early.
Yeah, yeah. Because, Ger, you explain what's happening, because we're playing Bulgaria on Thursday, is it?
Yeah, so we're playing Bulgaria with the Irish team on Thursday in the UEFA Nations League, and then we've got, that's away, and then we've got Finland on Sunday in Dublin. But we have special dispensation to allow us to travel to the game and come back without the 14-day quarantine, and that's done all over Europe with all the nations that are playing in the competition. But to do that, there's very specific criteria laid down. So we effectively must have a bubble. So you can't come in, you can't come out. So I can't go home to visit Rebecca and the boys. And I also, Rebecca can't come near me. So it's very, very sanitized. It's very clean. And the only way that you can do this without the chance of spreading COVID is by sticking very, very specifically to the rules.
The rules,
so,
yeah.
Even a little thing like if say Rory, if I'd gone into camp and Rory had come today and I'd go home, that's it, I'm out then. So I can't say. So like we had a COVID test this afternoon when we come back from training, COVID test straight away.
And
so,
everybody in the camp is COVID tested?
Yes. Yeah, we'll have three tests during camp from just last week, sorry, just pre-camp, one today and then one on Friday when we get back from Bulgaria.
Okay. And when are you free to see your newborn son?
Next Monday.
Right.
So he'd be walking at that stage.
going at the rate he decided to come out.
He's a man in a hurry.
Yeah.
And Rory, Rebecca, was Rory decided before? Yeah, you had that in your head.
We had a couple of names in our head, but then I came out and he had red hair, so that kind of sealed it.
Right, Rory. And the fact that he was born on the Peace Bridge didn't give you...
Yeah, no, there was a few names flying around, like Drahid and Shia Khan and...
Yeah, Shia Khan, yeah, sorry. But, thanks, we'll stick with Rory, thank you very much.
Stick with Rory, yeah.
Yeah. I suppose the management of Doughty is the thing now, isn't it? Too, he'll be, because he was king of the castle there for a long time, you'll have to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a lovely little chap, though, as in he came home, we arrived home with Rory and he said... Oh, my baby Rory, my best friend.
Ah,
so it was very, very adorable.
Yeah, very adorable.
Long may it last.
Yeah, there will be rows in the future. I can guarantee that. Listen, congratulations again, Ger. Good luck on Thursday. Pass on our best wishes to all the Republic of Ireland soccer team, particularly Stephen Kenny. It's his first competitive game. It's his first game, isn't it, in charge?
First game for the senior team.
Because of COVID. Okay, yeah. Thanks for taking our call, Rebecca and Gerard Dunn. Thank you. See you. Bye. Anish Toshin and Fiv Skelton and Oak to La Micah Fina. Good, Mike. Thanks very much. 51551 or ray@rte.ie. And news just in there. It's understood an announcement will be made later today on lifting restrictions in County Kildare following a recommendation from the National Public Health Emergency Team. They met this morning and considered the measures which have been in place in the county for over 3 weeks due to a spike in cases. That announcement, they say, is going to happen later on today, which is good news for people in County Kildare. Thanks for all those suggestions coming in. I'll get to them before we leave at 4:30. But now, on the line from America, we have Samantha Power, Pulitzer Prize winner and former US ambassador to the UN. Good afternoon. Good morning, Samantha.
Hi, great to be here.
Yeah, thanks for taking our call. The reason you're on is that you're telling us about the Galway International Arts Festival Autumn Edition. It starts on Thursday, 3rd of September, which is this Thursday. And you and others are doing virtual talks because everything's gone virtual. How have you been handling the whole lockdown situation? Are you Zoomed to within an inch of your life?
Yes, and in many instances, my dogs and my children are Zooming an inch of their lives. Just the number of Zoom bombing incidents we've had, it seems to be going up, not down, so I'm not sure. But yeah. I'm teaching this fall, so the students are descending. You know, there's always that electricity on campus, but nobody's descending except virtually. So it's a bit of a weird feeling, but everything's relative. I just wish my country America could get a grip on the COVID, because if it's going to get worse in fall, you know, we're starting from a baseline of still 1,000 deaths a day. And if it's about to get worse, you can imagine what that's going to look like. So, but it's a dark time here.
Yeah, I was looking at the final night of the Republican convention, the big speech on the South Lawn of the White House. What was it, 1,200, 1,500 people there? No masks, no social distancing. That doesn't send out a good message.
No, it doesn't. I mean, it's interesting, even just the whole week of the Republican convention, you know, it seems as though the message that Trump and his team had planned for re-election before COVID was, you may not like this guy. He may be, you know, his tactics may not be to your liking, but he gets things done. And what was amazing about his acceptance speech was that they stuck with that message. And yet on the number one and two issues that matter most to Americans, COVID and the economy, you know, we're in dire straits here because of his mishandling. So it was almost like he wanted to blow past that to show normalization, to show that things were on the mend. And there's a background assumption and hope, I think, on the part of his campaign that we just get used to a certain amount of death. And you know, that the more familiar it is, the less of a damaging development it is for him, and get used to a certain amount of economic suffering and deprivation, which is just a very sad strategy that he's resting on, and poignant. But may, you know, there's a little bit of tightening in the polls, and I think we'll see more of that. So it may have some effect.
And of course, you're working informally on Joe Biden's campaign, and you'll be attacking Donald Trump's handling of the COVID situation. And how could anybody possibly vote for a man who suggested that if you inject disinfectant into your body, it might cure the virus?
Well, his approach, apart from the one I just mentioned, of kind of trying to show strength and normalization now, has been to provoke fear in people. So I think it's a fear-based platform. Fear brown people coming to this country, fear African Americans on the streets protesting, fear now increasingly his message is a downturn in law and order, fear Joe Biden, because even if he's not anti-law and order, he's old and weak. This is Trump's message, and others will take advantage of him and defund the police and so forth. So yeah. I think it's playing to people's fear and to a sense still that Trump has an economic edge. I mean, he really still plays the idea of being a former successful businessman, and that still has traction.
I'm reading his niece's book at the moment. I've just finished it. Too Much and Never Enough, How My Family Created the World's Most Dangerous Man. Have you read it?
I have not.
No. Yeah, and it's, you know, it paints a horrible picture of him as a human being, and also questions his ability to run a business, saying that for most of his life he was a puppet for his dad, and his dad gave him a G up in most of his business deals initially. I read your book as well, and one of the things that you have used very successfully in your career is telling stories. And when you're the UN, the US ambassador to the UN, you brought people in, people who'd been trafficked, refugees, and you got them to tell their stories so that the people in the UN understood firsthand what was going on. Have you spoken to people who are Trump supporters?
I have, mainly where I went to high school in Georgia. And it really, I think I can't say that, you know, my group of closest friends are Trump supporters or anything like that, but, you know, people that I grew up with and had a lot in common with back in the day, my basketball teammates, my schoolmates, I think what unites them is a sort of sense that they've been condescended to a bit by elites, you know,
Democrats, is it? Well, obviously by Democrats.
I think what Trump has done brilliantly, and again, it's, I don't know that it can sustain him in this period, but is sort of paint all of Washington, all of science, all the experts in government who would talk down to you because they did better on a math test or a science test than you did, to paint them all with one broad brush as sort of talking down. And there's a community of people who have, in the, especially in the wake of the financial crisis, which, you know, whose legacy even before the pandemic was still being felt, you know, who feel like this America is not the America they grew up in, that the lives of their kids are showing, you know, there's less optimism about how their kids will do and their grandkids will do than they did. And that's the first time, you know, in generations that you've started to see that pessimism. And so this idea, again, that someone's to blame, whether it's an immigrant or an elite, a so-called elite in quotes, you know, has had more traction than you would expect.
Okay.
But and again, we ignore the appeal of that message at our peril. We thought it was, we were reading things like Mary Trump's book, you know, back in 2016. We were seeing what people were willing to say on the record and not studying carefully enough what they were saying privately. And I think nobody will be complacent this time around. It doesn't mean that a lack of complacency is enough to fend off Trump's challenge. But I think that what you're asking is a question that hadn't been asked enough prior to 2016. Uh-huh.
Yes.
But it's the main question that's been asked for the last nearly 4 years.
So when you sit in a room with people who are plotting or planning Joe Biden's campaign, you're saying, how do we communicate to these people who are voting for Donald Trump and convince them to vote for our man? And what's the answer you come up with?
I think projecting strength, particularly at a time of such chaos, not just the chaos caused by mass unemployment, economic and tragedy in terms of the health calamity, but just the chaos of Donald Trump, you know, the sort of lunging from one idea to the next and, you know, policy by tweet, the confusion. I think for a stable, fact-based, science-based, energetic, I think you've seen a lot of Biden's videos have him kind of jogging from one place to the next and showing this kind of force of personality. So that's one dimension. It's a competence, projecting competence, projecting strength. The other thing is to just ask the question, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Because Biden does, you know, get to associate with the tremendous economic recovery that Obama shepherded. Again, it didn't reach everybody and it wasn't perfect. But he wasn't just an affiliate with that. He helped manage the Recovery Act and the stimulus and the dispensing of the resources that were put in place to try to dig us out of the last economic hole. So very few people today would say that they are better off than they were 4 years ago. Trump is arguing you're not safe. You're not going to be safe in Joe Biden's America. Biden's response is, wait, if you're not feeling safe right now, this is Donald Trump's America. Mm. You know, you were feeling safe 4 years ago, in fact.
Yeah, you say that you didn't see Trump's election coming and you hadn't even countenanced the fact that he was going to be elected. You, the night of the election result, you invited female ambassadors from the UN round to your place to sort of celebrate Hillary Clinton's victory, as you thought. One of your children cried because you had assured him that Donald Trump wouldn't be elected, that Hillary Clinton would. How are you preparing yourself and your family for another Donald Trump victory if it happens?
Yeah, you're reminding me. No, Declan said, you lied to me.
Yes.
You lied to me. And I said, I had to explain for the first time, there's a difference between a lie and a mistake.
Right.
We're still working on the etymology of all of this.
Words, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it'll be even harder this time. Partly they're older and they see, you know, the racial animus, the incitement to violence. I mean, Trump's campaign, Kellyanne Conway, said in the last few days, you know, more violence benefits our campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see that, right, in terms of how, whether it's by sending, you know, federal forces
to Portland or Kenosha, yeah.
Or just to incite and to be retweeting white supremacist accounts and so forth. So, I mean, Declan, who's now 11, he sees all that. It's on the news every night. And for that to be affirmed, I think that's a chilling thought to have to explain to a child that a majority, it won't be a majority of us because I think Biden is almost undoubtedly will win the popular vote, but I'll have to go back to explaining the Electoral College and Biden is with the majority, and so I'm sure I'll take refuge in the popular vote. But look, right now, Biden is showing significant strength and enduring strength in the key swing states. I mean, the places to look are Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, those places where Obama voters from 2012 turned to Donald Trump in 2016. You can look at new states that have never been in play between, you know, or in play for Democrats before: Arizona, Georgia, Texas. Biden's competing in all of those states. So he has a lot of pathways to get to the requisite number of Electoral College votes. But Trump is playing dirty, and there is a lot of voter suppression going on. There's a lot of litigation by Trump's legal teams spread out across the states. You know, our elections are run at the state level, so it's very dispersed and hard to get a grasp of, you know, just the extent to which mail-in voting is going to work, the extent to which the cutoff of funding or the reduction of funding to the post office is going to affect the ability to process ballots on time. And Trump's strategy is fewer voters means more likely success for him. Mm. Biden's strategy, turn them out, make them have faith in the process, and then those votes have to be counted.
And what about women voting for Donald Trump? That always puzzled me.
It was surprising, I think, less so much that women went to him and more that so many fewer women voted in 2016 than had voted even in 2012 or 2008. And that's not commonly understood. So again, the key
so was that, that women didn't feel they could vote for Hillary Clinton, but didn't feel they could vote for Donald Trump either for different reasons?
I think there's some of that. I mean, the polls were such, and this again is a mistake that can't be made twice, but the polls showed us also a sufficiently strong lead for Hillary Clinton, at least by the standard of modern elections in the waning days, that some people were complacent and just thought this is in hand and I'm going to, you know, pick up my kids or go to my job or go to the gym and I'm going to skip the vote. So there are a lot of different factors, I think, but female turnout is expected to be unprecedented. We have more female candidates running at every level, the local, the state, and the federal level, than have ever run in election. You had, of course, in the 2018 midterm elections, more women participated in that midterm than have ever participated in a midterm election before. And you see Biden, one reason that he's ahead in these swing states for now is that he's made a significant dent in suburban women. And again, every margin, remember the last election was settled by 78,000 votes in across three states. I mean, it's a pittance.
Minuscule,
right? And so Biden's inroads with suburban women's concern about Donald Trump's, the fact that he's likely to get another Supreme Court seat, in a second term, if he had a second term, the fate of a woman's right to choose, the fact that, you know, he has ensured that abroad we can't support family planning efforts, the way he talks about women in such a degrading way, all of this, plus just COVID and the economy and the fact that it's often women holding down the fort in households, have led those women to turn away in very significant numbers, according to the polls. And right. Again, we have less faith in the polls than we once did because 2016.
Do you talk to Joe Biden on a regular basis?
I'm in touch with him, but not, I mean, he's a busy man. So not as regular as it used to be.
Is he confident?
I think he's playing every day like it's his last, you know.
Right.
I don't think anybody after what we've experienced as a country and looking at the strong support Trump still holds with his base, right? And the fact you can't, if you're Joe Biden, you know what Fox News is putting into the minds of Americans every day. They're showing images of carnage. Sometimes they're using footage that's even from other countries that nobody has fact-checked, and they're claiming it's American cities.
Is that true? Is that true? They're doing that?
Images and video footage. I mean, not on purpose, but just in the kind of haphazard way that they, whether it's, again, the sort of the blogosphere, the right-wing ecosystem in social media, or even relatively mainstream sources, they're making mistakes, but their goal is to just show that there is chaos and there's a law and order problem that only Donald Trump will solve. But the challenge they have is that it's his America. It's not 4 months into his administration, it's 4 years into his administration. And so, even just in the last 24 hours, Trump has, the president has tweeted a photo of an African-American pushing over a white person, just a random photo, to show this is America, you know, this is what's going to come of your America. I mean, all with this racial underpinning that's very, very disturbing and borders on incitement. But Joe Biden has to show that this is Trump's America, that this is what he has bequeathed, and that it's the product of his focus on his own political and financial fortunes above the fortunes of Americans, and that any focus on law and order now is to divert you from the core facts in people's lives, which is unemployment is at record highs and 1,000 people are dying a day because of Trump's mishandling of this pandemic. He's just got to stay on message. And I think Biden, for all of his challenges, staying on message sometimes over the years, he's been very disciplined in this campaign so far.
Do you lose hope just in the world? Because you were at the coalface there in the UN and you saw how messed up the world is. You saw what people do, how they lie to your face about things. You know, human rights abuse here, there and everywhere. The treatment of women around the world, dictatorships. Do you lose hope?
I don't, in part because, you know, it's a glass half full, half empty, I suppose, way of looking at the world. But even now, where freedom has been in decline around the world for 14 straight years, you know, according to most metrics, you still have more political protests in the last year than at any time in recorded history. I cut my teeth in the, you know, early 2000s in Darfur reporting on the genocide there. When I left office in January 2017, I never imagined that Omar al-Bashir, the president of Sudan, who'd been indicted for genocide, would end up in jail, nor did I imagine that women on the streets of Sudan would lead the protests to bring down this military dictatorship. I see Trump's, you know, sort of lingering success with his base and those people who are seeing those images on Fox News every night, but I see that people are noticing facts and they care about it. And they care about expertise. You know, no more do they want a pilot flying an airplane who doesn't have that expertise.
Samantha, it's interesting when people, and you're a Joe Biden supporter, and I heard you talking to Mary Wilson a few weeks ago, and you said, like, I think something to the effect that you're trying 24/7 with every fiber of your being to make sure that Donald Trump doesn't get a second term in office. But every time we talk about here, I don't know if it's the same in the States, but you've mentioned Donald Trump's name probably twice, if not three times more than you've mentioned Joe Biden's name. That's the nature of conversations, isn't it?
Well, he's in power.
Yeah.
I mean, it's his decisions that are costing lives in here and now. No, I think this Donald Trump would like to make this election a choice between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. And every election is a choice up to a point. But right now, where Donald Trump, and I'm sorry I keep mentioning his name, we refer to him as Voldemort in our household.
Oh, dear, right, okay.
Not to mention his name. It has so far been a referendum. And how can it not be a referendum when you're asking the CEO of a company that's going bankrupt, do you want him to stay in the job? Do you want him to continue to be managing the response to a pandemic that isn't going anywhere? Do you want somebody who has no proven empathy to be the one figuring out what your unemployment benefits are in a period where we can't bring jobs back because we can't manage the infection?
Yeah. Just on a personal thing, I see you're hitting a significant age in a few weeks' time. Is that something you think about?
Really? We're in the midst of this crisis?
And age doesn't matter.
Not to turn 50. Thank you for mentioning that. To your audience. I had hoped actually to be in County Kerry for my 50th birthday near Waterville, where I spend large chunks of my summer as often as I can. But my American passport now, of course, requires me to be quarantined wherever I go. And so this is the first summer in a long time that we haven't been able to go. But we'll hope to make up for lost time on the back end of the pandemic whenever that comes.
Okay.
And hope an American passport, again, you know, becomes what I think it, for all of our flaws, what it had been, which is, you know, a symbol of values, of pluralism, of diversity, of inclusion. Now it's a symbol of an inability to get a pandemic in check and a level of divisiveness that pits people of different ethnic groups and religions against one another. We've got to go rehabilitate what image. America.
Yes, yeah. So Samantha Power is part of the Go International Arts Festival Autumn Edition, and it starts this Thursday, 3rd of September, and also included speakers Professor Luke O'Neill, Mary McKeown, Colm Tobin, Eamon Dunphy and Fintan O'Toole and others. And if you Google Go Arts Festival, you'll find out how you can get involved there. Samantha, thanks so much for talking to us today. Thank you.
I'm grateful. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, 5 on 5 5 1 or ray at rte.ie. All this week, we're on the hunt for Ireland's best chicken wings. I need music here. With thanks to our friends in Frank's Hot Sauce. Frank's Hot Sauce are celebrating 100 years of making their famous sauces this year. Are your wings the talk of the town or the talk of the family? Are you the ones that people come back again and again for? Well, if they are, send us in the recipe and you could be one of the winners this week. We have 5 Weber barbecues to give away. And then on Friday, one of those will be upgraded to a super duper Weber barbecue. Gina Daly from the Daily Dish will be cooking up a storm on Friday, replicating all the recipes, and then she will decide who is the winner. The first of our finalists is David McLean with his Where Have All the Chicken Wings Gone recipe. How are you doing, David?
Hi, Ray. How are you?
Listen, how many ingredients? Have you counted the number of ingredients in your chicken wings recipe?
Oh, there's possibly 20.
Yeah.
The secret one is the apple, the crab apple jelly.
Which you make with your own apples?
Crab apples, yeah, from the garden.
Right. I'm just going to run through it very quickly, but you marinate in garlic powder, onion, salt, black pepper, sea salt, ginger, paprika, celery salt, dried sage, finely grated rind of lemon, juice of a lemon, Irish rapeseed oil, soy sauce and cider vinegar. Just the marinade.
That's it, yeah.
Three hours in that in the fridge.
Yeah. Where
did you come up with this? Is it something you read in a book or is it just...
No, just experimenting. I love to experiment with cooking.
Right. Now, what's the best thing you can say about your chicken wings?
The best thing is they disappear very quickly, but that's also the worst thing because sometimes I don't get any at all.
I'm looking at a picture here. These are ones you made over the weekend.
That's right. Cooked up a batch yesterday and I actually got to eat a few of them.
Yeah, you served them with mayo mango or mango mayo. And sour cream with some sweet chili sauce. They're dipping sauce.
Just a little bit different from the blue cheese sauce.
Yeah. I'm just looking at the coating which you apply to your chicken wings after they're cooked. Frank's Red Hot Buffalo Sauce. Is it hoisin sauce?
Hoisin sauce,
honey, your crab apple jelly, cider vinegar, butter, finely chopped clove of garlic, Irish whiskey.
Yeah, just give it a little bit of flavour. But don't worry if kids are having it, the alcohol does cook out of it.
Right. Good news for you, David McLean. You're our first finalist.
Great.
And you've just won for yourself a Weber barbecue.
That's fantastic.
The Weber Pulse 1000 electric barbecue grill worth €1 short of €500.
Wow.
Yes.
That's amazing. Thank you very much.
And come Friday, if Gina Daly decides that your recipe is the winner, the best chicken wing recipe in Ireland, you will be upgraded to a Weber Genesis 2 EP435 GBS.
Wow.
It sounds like a motorbike. And it's worth €5 short of €1,800. That's a great prize.
That is amazing. Does she need a jar of the crab apple jelly to complete the recipe?
She'll be on to you. If she does, she'll be on to you. Right, David, well done. Congratulations.
Thanks, Ray.
That's David McLean. We'll have another finalist tomorrow. News just in that Micheál Martin tweeted that the lockdown has been lifted. We will be lifted on County Kildare, which is great news. Mary Wilson will have more on that on Drive Time. She's on the way. We're back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Monday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.